All right, welcome everybody to our first call of 2017. Great to have you all aboard. If you're new, my name is Mark Reynolds. I'm part of the CCL staff, and I'm honored to be able to host today's call. Our guest today, Yoram Bauman, has been a longtime friend of our organization and made a heroic effort in Washington State over the last couple of years, which we're going to ask him to talk about in a few minutes. And we're particularly interested in not just in what a lot of you did to help in Washington State, but also if you were on our December call, one of the things we said is, without an absence of enthusiastic enforcement of the Clean Power Plan, we believed that we needed another lever, and that finding places where we could support state carbon tax efforts was going to be an additional lever point that we could add pressure on the federal government to pass carbon fee and dividend. I want to give you a few updates before that. Also, I want to let you know that one of the things we'll do is review some of the accomplishments from this year and also some of the things that have happened since last month's call. I'll start by saying that Jay Butera, who many of you know, he was the person who formed the Climate Solutions Caucus, has spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill over the last few weeks and told me this is the most positive meetings he's had in the 10 years that he's been meeting with Republican lawmakers. So there's a few things that I want to tell you to report from him. One is, you know that Chris Gibson retired from Congress, so the Gibson resolution went away with Chris Gibson. But that is being reconstituted, and we'll be announcing which office that will be coming from, and we're excited that we'll be supporting a new Gibson resolution. It won't be called the Gibson resolution, but nevertheless, it is coming. We're excited about it, and more to hear on that. Also, we were down a few people because some people didn't run for re-election. A few people lost their re-election bids for the Climate Solutions Caucus. But in the last 3 weeks, we've replaced the three Republicans that we needed. So initially, it took us 3 years to get the first Republican on the Climate Solutions Caucus. In the last 3 weeks, we added three Republicans. So that includes Mia Love of Utah, Representative Stefanik from New York, and Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania. So we are back to 9 Democrats and 9 Republicans on the Climate Solutions Caucus. And so we're very excited about that, and that we'll be able to continue working on building a group of people in the House who have agreed to work across the aisle on climate change solutions. So that probably has a lot to do with Jay's enthusiasm about how things are going. I also want to just let you know that I want to congratulate everybody again that for the 8th consecutive year, you doubled the size of your organization. So at the end of 2015, we listed 25,320 people as having gone to our site to register themselves as supporters. We're now, we ended last year at 55,814. So congratulations to everybody. That's 8 consecutive years that the size of the organization doubled. I frankly thought that was a crazy idea going into last year, but nevertheless, it happened again. We're going to be announcing that the spring lobby drive is up and underway and that the international conference is open. So if you spent any time kind of fretting or worrying since the election, you know, we are back in business and making things happen, and we need to get your feet on the ground. Schedule those appointments for the lobby drive, which we'll be talking about, and I recommend that you register for the conference today. We want to make a big statement this year. We want to have as many people in D.C. as possible. The conference is open. The discounted registration fee of $129 advance fee is open, and you can register for that now. I also want to tell you about two additions to the advisory board. If you saw our episode of Years of Living Dangerously, you know that Jay worked very closely with Bradley Whitford, who's best known from the West Wing. And Mr. Whitford has agreed to join the advisory board. Here's what he said. He said, "I'm thrilled to be joining the CCL advisory board. There is no organization on the planet that focuses more effectively on a tangible solution to climate change. Time is running out. Our children can't afford cynicism, apathy, despair, or partisanship. We need to move forward. CCL understands that. Join us." So Jay, good work there, and we're so happy to have Mr. Whitford on. Also this week, former Energy Secretary Stephen Chu joined the advisory board. In addition to being the Energy Secretary under the Obama administration, he received the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1997. So Peter Joseph, that was, again, just some really outstanding outreach effort on your part. So again today, I'll be introducing our guest, Yoram Bauman, in just a minute. We'll go over a few more things about this year, including a little bit more detail on Spring Lobby Drive and the International Conference. We'll go over what we've got to do to get into action. And then it's always been my belief that given that the heart of our activity this month for U.S. and Canadian chapters is planning 2017, it's always best to do that based on a bet of accomplishment. So we want to review some of the things that happened this year so we can build on what already happened. Okay, so let me say about our guest, Yoram Bauman. So first of all, Yoram is not new to us. Yoram is a longtime friend of ours and the organization. He's spoken at our conferences. I'm one of the people who commented on the sleeve of one of his most recent books. He has a PhD in economics from the University of Washington, but he's also a stand-up comic. It's almost like being an economist and a comic is not torture enough. He does both of them. And he really did some remarkable work in Washington State. And given that we see we can add some additional leverage to supporting Congress to enact federal pricing mechanisms by providing support where it makes sense in the state. And I'll review the principles, four very simple principles that we've used to define where it would make sense for us to encourage you to support those efforts or not. But anyway, first of all, Yoram, thank you so much for making yourself available on a Saturday morning. Thank you for all you did for Washington State and welcome to our call.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I want to make sure to give a shout out to all the great CCL folks inside Washington State and elsewhere who helped with the campaign. CCL, you know, Bellevue, Gwen Hansen and her husband, Eric, were on our board. We had terrific help from CCL chapters all over Washington State, Tri-Cities, Richland, San Juan's, Whidbey, and folks making phone calls from like CCL Honolulu and other folks around that. So I want to thank everybody in CCL who helped out with the 732 campaign.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. All of them were so appreciative for the leadership that you provided for that. So before we get into some of the lessons learned, which is what we really wanted to get into, could you just give people the quick background sketch of what I-732 was so that for people who aren't as familiar as those people who worked on it, they have an idea of what we're talking about there, and then we'll get into some of the things that we learned from this effort.
Yeah, so I-732 was the first carbon tax to go on the ballot in the United States. Here in Washington State, and we gathered 360,000 signatures in 2015 to qualify for the ballot, and then we had a ballot measure campaign to try to win at the ballot in November of 2016. We didn't succeed, but we gave it a good shot and learned a lot along the way. And the basic outline of the policy was a carbon tax, $25 per ton of CO2 on fossil fuels burned in Washington State. Carbon tax goes up 3.5% plus inflation over time. The intent was to be revenue neutral, with most of the money going to cut the state sales tax by a full point as a way to provide benefits to households and businesses across the state. And then we also reduced some business taxes for manufacturers as a way to address impacts on energy intensive trade exposed businesses. And we provided an earned income tax credit benefit for low income households.
Great. And were there particular, we know that there's issues that states have that we don't have to deal with on a federal basis in examining how you would design a carbon tax. Were there particular constraints in the state of Washington that force you to make certain choices based on what the state of Washington says, or was this all just the way you designed it, given what you thought was the best way to go forward in Washington?
No, there were a couple of constraints. So one of them, we certainly looked at a dividend approach in Washington State. There's an mm-hmm. element of the state constitution that prohibits the gift of public funds except to the poor and infirm. And although the legal issues like this they never seem to be 100% solid, there was a significant concern that per capita dividends to everybody in Washington State would violate that provision of the state constitution. And that's one reason why we looked at reducing taxes instead of going the dividend route. Another thing I'd say that's relevant at the state level is my understanding is that CCL's national policy includes a border tax adjustment, and it's pretty hard, if not impossible, to do a border tax adjustment at the state level. So you need to think about how to address impacts on manufacturers, how to make sure that energy-intensive businesses can continue to compete with businesses outside of the state.
Yeah, and I think that that's one thing that a lot of people misunderstood is, you know, in the Puget Sound area alone, there's 110 Boeing engineers. If you don't do something to accommodate that, and nobody's going to support something that the state of Washington does that has the potential of losing Boeing as an employer. So it's one of the things you have to put in the mix for sure. So let's kind of start with, okay, so we did this, and there's some things we learned, and there's some things we would probably do exactly the way we did it, and there's some things that we would probably do differently. What are the primary lessons learned in both those directions?
Well, I think that I think the general outline of the policy was pretty good. If you're going to look at a tax reduction approach as opposed to a dividend approach, then I think you're looking for a broad tax that you can reduce that's going to provide benefits to households and citizens across the state. We did the sales tax. It's worth noting that there's no income tax in Washington state. So even if we wanted to do that, we couldn't do that in Washington state. So you want to do something that's going to provide broad benefits to households and businesses across the state. And then you want to arguably do something to address impacts on energy intensive trade exposed businesses, so manufacturing businesses, whether that's reducing existing taxes or providing a phase in of the carbon tax, something to address those competitiveness concerns. And then I would argue you should do something to provide extra benefits for low income households. So I think the general outline of the 732 policy was pretty good and provides some pretty good directions for other folks who are looking at doing things that are similar. There are some specific details of the policy that that created some heartburn and certainly caused us some problems. I think that there was a state fiscal note that came out that argued that we were revenue negative instead of revenue neutral, and that was something that became a big political issue. What ended up happening for folks who don't know is we ended up getting a lot of opposition from folks on the left side of the political spectrum, including a bunch of environmental groups in the state. There's sort of a long backstory there. There was an effort to try to push another carbon pricing measure that would have been more of a unite the left kind of approach as opposed to a bipartisan effort, which we were trying to do. But we ended up taking a good bit of kind of friendly fire, and that was quite disappointing. And the fiscal note was one of the things that they sort of hammered us with. But I think the general outline of the policy was pretty good. I think that the way that we used grassroots organizing, I think was very strong. I mean, nobody really expected us to qualify for the ballot, because the way that these things are traditionally done these days is you find a sugar daddy to write you $1 million check, and then you hire people to go out and collect signatures. And we certainly didn't have a $1 million check lying around. And so, we did it the hard way. We beat the pavement and really created this grassroots momentum and grassroots energy in Washington state. And again, the participation of a number of CCL chapters around Washington state, I think was a huge part of that. So the grassroots energy and some of that we took from CCL or learned from CCL, the importance of writing letters to the editor and really being engaged at a grassroots level and at the level of chapters of Carbon Washington around the state who are pushing the initiative. Some things that we could have done differently, other than there were some specific details of the policy that we would change knowing what we know now. So there are definitely things that we learned. I think one other thing that I would flag personally is my understanding is that CCL has a very positive attitude and tries to always say nice things about people. And there were times in the campaign where things got heated and I said some things that, I think our campaign overall tried to also be very friendly, but there were times when we violated that rule, when I violated that rule, and it ended up hurting us. So at one point I was quoted in the New York Times as saying that there were folks on the left who were using race and class as political weapons, in order to get bigger government. Whether or not that's true or not, that turned out to be just kind of a stick that that was used to beat up on the campaign in a way that was that turned out to be very unfortunate. So I think that what you're doing in terms of trying to stay very positive is a really good idea and is something that's worth always keeping sort of in the front of your mind going forward.
Wow. Well, Joerm, I'm kind of blown away by the honesty of that statement that you just made about yourself. You know, a lot of us make mistakes and we say things that we regret, but we usually, you know, figure out how to explain that like it was somebody else's fault. You know, so I find that extraordinarily generous on your part. And I think a lot of us were somewhat mystified by some of the attacks from the environmental justice groups. Are there ways that you think that in the future, environmental justice groups could be reached out to in advance to head off any potential problems like what ended up happening there?
I'd like to say that the answer is yes, but I'm not sure. You know, it's possible that there were specific issues here in Washington State that made this kind of a special situation where, you know, where there was a kind of this other effort to try to get a what I refer to as the progressive takeover of the world approach, like a carbon price, and then you spend the money on all sorts of green things. And, you know, it's possible that was just an unfortunate coincidence in Washington State, and that in general, a policy like ours, where we cut the sales tax and we fund an earned income tax credit benefit, you know, it would be embraced by folks on the left side of the political spectrum. I think it's also possible that this is not a one-off situation, and that, you know, there are folks in the environmental justice community who, you know, rightly or wrongly feel that revenue neutrality is bad, and that there has to be money for some of their priorities. And, I don't know how to square that circle. I'm not sure what the way forward is with that.
Okay. Given that you were committed to doing this in a revenue neutral way, did you get the support from the right that you expected, or not support, or what kind of, did you get much enthusiasm in your attempt to make it revenue neutral from the right side of the equation in Washington?
Well, my joke summary of the campaign is that we were happy to get 41% of the vote in Washington State despite being opposed by just about everybody. and that's not exactly true. I mean, we did have endorsements from a number of folks on the left side of the political spectrum. We got a number of like the progressive alternative weeklies in Seattle endorsed the campaign. We did get some support from folks on the right side of the political spectrum. I think that, you know, we got late endorsements from Rob McKenna, who was the, he narrowly lost the governor's race in 2012. We got a late endorsement from Slade Gorton, who was U.S. Senator from Washington State for many years, since retired. And we did get endorsements from three Republican state senators, sitting Republican state senators, as well as a former state majority leader. So that was valuable. Some of those endorsements came so late in the game that it was hard to put them to much use. I think that one of the challenges we faced is that a number of those folks who are retired now work for law firms, and they have clients in the fossil fuel industry, and so they have to be careful. Even if they personally like the idea, they have to be careful about what they say about it. I think most of what we got from the right side of the political spectrum, and this includes the business community as well, was not so much enthusiastic in support, but it was a damping down of opposition. So there were a number of chambers of commerce that were neutral on 732 instead of being opposed to 732. In the business community, the biggest wave sort of in that area was that the Western States Petroleum Association, which represents the refinery operators here in Washington State, came out officially as being neutral on 732. And, you know, we'd made the case to them that there, if you look at the website of the Western States Petroleum Association, it says that they support properly designed market-based policies. And we made the case that this was a properly designed market-based policy. You know, we provided tax reductions for manufacturers. The refineries were manufacturers. They got you know, tax reductions from that along with everybody else. So we didn't try to single out the oil industry as being kind of bad guys. And, you know, having them be neutral was a big deal because they refine 6 billion gallons of fossil fuels and petroleum products in Washington state. And, you know, putting $10 or $20 million into an opposition campaign is not a problem for them. And so I think that it's worth keeping that in mind, that even though we didn't get the support that we didn't get enthusiastic support from the right or from most folks in the business community, but the fact that a lot of them sort of decided to stay on the sidelines was a significant accomplishment.
Yeah, great. Okay. I want to change directions for just a little bit and talk about grassroots organizing. It's something that we're very interested in, and we're always interested where things work. You know, one of the things that's always been interesting to me was after 2009, you know, the House passes Waxman-Markey, the Senate doesn't pass anything. A political scientist at Harvard, Theda Skocpol, writes over a 100-page criticism, and she said, here's the problem. The problem was all the support was in the Beltway, and it needed to be back home in the district. And so we've always been interested in how do you create effective local organizing campaigns. So how did you build your grassroots organization?
Well, it was a lot of folks working really hard for a long time. I mean, my part of it was, you know, I did kind of talks and comedy talks around the state. So it was sort of helpful to have comedy as a way to draw a crowd in and connect with people. Having connections with CCL chapters around the state was incredibly useful, but mostly it was just I think slow and steady and kind of just keep it up. And I think we had a vision for this revenue neutral carbon tax that I think is similar to the CCL vision for a fee and dividend policy, and having that lodestar, having that sort of the North Star out there as a guide, as a way to bring people on board, I think was incredibly important. And then from there, you know, we had an email list, and you know, we tried to run a ballot measure in 2014 for November of 2014, and we didn't have everything lined up, and then we tried again in 2016. I think that at some point it was important that we were able to raise enough money to hire some staff. And, you know, I want to give shout outs to our staff, especially our campaign co-directors, Kyle Murphy and Duncan Clausen, who did really incredible work. But for a long time we were all volunteer, and when we were able to you know, raised $100,000 and sort of hire a couple staff members, that meant that we could accomplish a lot more.
Yeah. Okay. I've gotten a lot of questions about what's next in Washington state. So, and it's along three lines. Some people have asked, okay, they're getting emails from the Alliance. Some people are saying they're hearing some noise about what Governor Inslee's doing. Some curiosity about what's next for Carbon Washington. So is there anything you can say about those three different items?
Carbon Washington is continuing to think about next steps. So, so I'm not going to go into too much detail about that.
Okay.
There are other folks working on climate policy and carbon pricing in Washington state. The governor, Jay Inslee, has put a carbon tax into his budget, as he did in previous years. The challenge with the legislative route is that it's pretty hard to get stuff through the state legislature here, even though Washington state nationally has a reputation as sort of being a blue state. The state legislature is actually split between the Republicans and the Democrats. And it's just been hard. It's been hard going in the legislature. There are folks, including in the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy that you mentioned, is kind of this Unite the Left effort to do something about climate change and carbon pricing. They're continuing to talk about legislation, about ballot measures, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see whether they actually pull the trigger.
Okay, good. Well, is there anything else that you would like to share with us or that you think would be relevant or important for us to know in, you know, one of the things that we're going to be evaluating is there are states that it would make sense for us to go out and support this year. So is there anything else that you would like to give us as just input, feedback, anything else to debrief from this or guidance about what states we would look at helping or not?
Well, so I know that there's a fellow with CCF, Kevin, I think maybe who's starting to do work on state level issues, and hopefully I'm going to be continuing to do some work on state level issues. I think we have a source of funding for me to do some work looking at opportunities in other states. So I'd say stay tuned, and I hope that CCL will help share the results of my work as well as the. Of course, the work internally and the work that other groups are doing. There is an organization now out in Massachusetts that has a state carbon pricing network. So there are other, there especially since the election, there are a lot of folks now who are thinking about, okay, what can we do at the state level, and what can we do about carbon pricing at the state level. So you know, I just encourage folks to stay involved. Certainly, feel free to reach out to me if you're interested in working on things at the state level, and I'm happy to connect up with Kevin or other folks at CCL. The other thing that I just say personally is my family is in a couple of months is actually going to be moving to Salt Lake City. I've had the pleasure of meeting with the CCL group out in Salt Lake City. So hello to you all. And thanks for meeting me last month, I think it was. And, so I think there's going to be a lot of talk about doing things at the state level, and hopefully the Initiative 732 experience will help folks in other states build on that and push the ball forward both at the state level and in terms of building for national action.
Great. Well, Yoram, you know, me personally and this organization are big fans of people who stick their necks out and take big risks. You know, it's pretty easy to talk about what people ought to be doing. It's entirely different to actually put yourself out there where you risk everything. You know, you're risking your time, your reputation, what else you could do with your life while you're working to do something so important. So, you know, we just have a huge amount of gratitude for sticking yourself out there like that. And it was incredibly inspiring. And it's a real pleasure to work with you.
Well, thank you so much. And again, I want to make sure to give props to all the CCL folks who helped with the campaign, and keep plugging away at it.
All right. Thank you, Yoram. You're welcome to stay on the call, last another 10 or 12 minutes. You're welcome to stay on if you want. But if you have to drop off, we certainly understand that it's a Saturday and there's other things people can be doing. So let me just clarify one thing. We continue as an organization to have our focus. We believe the most important thing we can do as an organization is get a federal price on carbon. That is still the focus. That is what CCL is doing. We just believe adding state levers increases pressure on Congress to act. And as you could hear from what I was saying earlier on, we're getting very good feedback, particularly from Republican offices about wanting to step up on this issue. So don't be surprised if we keep hearing more good things coming out of Jay Butera and those people who are already on the Hill. There are four principles that we laid out as we look at, are there places where people are doing something, there is an organization, they have a chance of success, that we would encourage our people to participate. And those four principles are, they're designed to be effective in reducing greenhouse gas emissions beyond existing policies. So one is designed to be effective at reducing greenhouse gas emissions beyond existing policies. Two, it will protect low-income households from price increases. So two is, it will protect low-income households from price increases. Three, it's politically viable for the state. So, you know, Yoram was talking about one of the issues you have is in the state you can't do a border tax adjustment. So you've got to take into account, what do you do about protecting the manufacturing base? And then four is that it will harmonize well with carbon fee and dividend at a federal level. So you'll hear more on that coming down the road, but that's what we've defined as what's going to be our organizing principles in how we go forward. Okay. So we have two things coming up soon. Well, one is you're going to see, we don't want to wait around with Congress at all. So one of the things you're going to see in your action sheet for the U.S. people is we want you to call your member of Congress today. Now, if you can't get through to the switchboard today, call them Monday or call them Tuesday. But we want to start stepping out, influencing, reaching out to Congress now. So the first step is call them. Call them up. Tell them this is important. There's a script in your action sheet telling you exactly what we're asking people to do. Then in the spring, we're going to do our lobby drive. We targeted it for March. The House calendar is really hard to coordinate with this year. So we trust you. We know that you know with your group and you're a member of Congress, you're going to know the best time to meet with them. The thing that we love about the spring lobby drive is, you know, on average, when we schedule meetings in D.C., even oftentimes they're scheduled to be face-to-face with members of Congress. About 10% of the time they end up being face-to-face because members get called to hearings, et cetera. Last year during spring lobby drive, over 30% of meetings were face-to-face. And we want to get face-to-face time. We want to let people know in this Congress, early in the Congress, that action is a priority. And if you look at this Congress compared with the last Congress, when we started the last Congress 2 years ago, we had no Gibson resolution. We had no Climate Solutions Caucus. So we're starting this Congress already way ahead in terms of our work with them. So we'll make a full-fledged effort with the spring lobby drive. If you are brand new, if this is your first meeting with your member of Congress, you're probably going to be explaining the outlines of the carbon fee and dividend. But for many of you, this is going to be the 5th or 10th or 15th or 20th meeting. And so what you're going to be doing is building on, riding upon those things that you've already accomplished with your chapter. And then the June 2017 conference is open. The conference is a week earlier than this year than normal. So it's the 11th through the 13th. I think this is the first Father's Day I'm going to be home for a long time. I'm telling my kids they need to make up for all the back presents I didn't get for all the Father's Day I was in D.C. But the conference is open for registration. I recommend that if you're coming, you register now. There is a pre-registration fee of $129, but if you register in advance, you get the discounted fee. I recommend that you do that. We need to make a big statement, and having as many people in Washington, D.C. there as possible is really, really important. Also with the spring lobby drive, if you're an appointment setter or a liaison, either information has gone out to you or it will go out to you asking you to confirm that you're actually scheduling the appointment. We need to know who's doing that. And again, we trust that your group knows when will be the best time to schedule an appointment with your member of the House and your senators. Okay. So U.S. and Canada, the primary action is to plan for what we're going to do in 2017. And I'm going to review some of the accomplishments in just a minute. I think it's important that you look at the climate movement in general, look at your chapter, look at you individually, and then plan based on that. The other action in Canada is we're going to be focused on letters to the editor, where in the U.S., we're asking you to call your member of Congress, if not today, Monday, and then practice the laser talk. The laser talk we included is the one on what's the difference between a scientist saying something and peer review? You know, what is the science versus a scientist? And we thought that was timely, given there's been some, you know, issues coming up about scientists again, and that we get that all straightened out and make sure that there's no nonsense out there between what some scientists said and what has been worked out in the peer review process, which we all know the peer review process is not perfect, but it's extremely careful. The difference between scientists and other people who share their opinions is the scientists know the antibiotic has to work. The airplane has to fly. I mean, my goodness, we landed something the size of an SUV on Mars a couple of years ago. We have the best scientists in the world. They're working on this, and they know the difference between natural variability and what has happened from our man-made efforts. So get into action in both the U.S. and Canada. If you're one of the groups, I saw that David, our leader from Nigeria, was on the call live. So whether you're from Africa or one of the North American chapters, the main thing to do is to get into action, go make something happen. Okay, so I want to review some of the things that happened since that happened over the course of last year. So first of all, we created the Climate Solution Caucus. We had a lot of resolutions. In addition to working on the Gibson resolution, many of you know that the state of California voted in the House and the Senate to encourage Congress to pass carbon fee and dividend. We had a lot of municipalities do the same thing, including six more just this month. As I said at the start of the call, our membership increase went from 25,000 to over 55,000. So again, congratulations, everybody, to doubling the size of your organization. You continue to blow my mind in your ability to do that. We were featured on Years of Living Dangerously. We've never been featured on a major show like that. We got 592 endorsements from community leaders, businesses, et cetera, in this year alone. Canada is committed to having a uniform carbon price throughout the entire country, and that could be dealt with individually in the provinces, but that there'd be a uniform price for all of Canada. And in Canada also, we had over 100 face-to-face meetings. That's more than doubles the face-to-face meetings with MPs from the previous year. So congratulations, everybody in Canada. Last year, the national conference had over 900 people. And the follow-up to the national conference, our Congressional Education Day in November, where we go back and report the results to the national conference back to the members, we had 46 of 50 states represented and saw well over 300 offices. We released two major studies, the Household Impact Study, that showed how individual households would be impacted by our policy, and also the Dividend Delivery Study. So that, when we continue to evaluate what the notes say in all our debriefing, our meetings with our members of Congress, 3 years ago, the biggest issue was China. Then 2 years ago, it was the dividend. So what we said is, let's give people everything they need to know of what it would take to actually implement a dividend. Interestingly, the most frequently raised issue this year was the Climate Solutions Caucus. So at least in our meetings, where we know that the social science holds up, the social science says that if you don't talk about solutions, you won't make progress. That in our meetings, where we are focused on solutions, there seems to be a lot more interest in, okay, how will we go about doing this, than here's why you'll never be able to do it. We had 2,465 letters to the editor and 383 op-eds. Both of those numbers are a little bit down from the previous year, and I suspect that's because some of us focused more on getting endorsements, but we really want to ramp that up this year. The first year of a Congress is when everything happens. So if there's ever a time that we want to show an enormous amount of enthusiasm for getting letters and op-eds published, it is right now. We had 40,046 personal letters to members of Congress, 40,046, at least log. Probably there were more than that people wrote in, but people told us of 40,046 personal letters to members of Congress. We continued to focus on building the conservative side of our organization, following up the previous year's Texas Energy Freedom Tour. We have the Southern Energy Freedom Tour, which continue to build up, not just in conservative districts, but adding a lot more conservative people to the organization. On an international basis, we are now a UN-accredited observing organization. We now have volunteer regional coordinators in all five regions outside of the United States. We had national conferences in Sweden, Germany, Australia, and Nigeria. Nigeria held its first lobby day. David, I know you're on the call. Congratulations. And in Africa alone, we went from zero groups in zero countries to one or more groups in 12 countries. And again, David, the head of CCL Africa, is on the call. So I hope you are feeling recognized for that, David, and that you can send that back to all our other chapters there. All right, everybody. So what it is for us is time to get into action. Call your member of Congress. Get your appointment set up for spring lobby drive. Get yourself registered for the conference. We got a big year in front of us. Yoram Bauman, thank you so much.